Radio Prague News. The Czech Republic has pledged to release 3 million crowns to help fight the Ebola outbreak in Africa. The first shipment of Czech military aid to Kurdish forces fighting against Islamic State radicals in Iraq has been sent from the military airport in Pardubice. And the Czech movie Fair Play has been chosen as the Czech Republic's official entry for the 2015 Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. The Czech Republic is to release 3 million crowns to the NGO Doctors Without Borders to help fight the Ebola outbreak in Africa. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka discussed the situation in Africa and the possibilities of Czech help with the head of the Czech branch of Doctors Without Borders, Pavel Gruber, on Thursday, along with several members of the government. The Czech Republic has also pledged to send material support, such as protective equipment. Final details will be specified by the Interior and Health Ministers by the end of September. The first shipment of Czech military aid to Kurdish forces fighting against Islamic State radicals in northern Iraq was sent from the military airport in Pardubice on Thursday. The C-17 Globemaster transport plane carried 25 tons of ammunition worth 41 million crowns, including millions of rounds of ammunition for Kalashnikov assault rifles and machine guns, as well as hand grenades and ammunition for anti-tank rocket launchers. Representatives of the government, trade unions and employers on Wednesday agreed on the draft state budget for 2015. Under the proposal, the state budget deficit for next year should not exceed 100 billion crowns and will include hikes in salaries in the public sector. Speaking after the meeting of the tripartite, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka expressed his confidence that the budget proposal will be approved by the cabinet on Monday. The Czech authorities are planning a major clampdown on fraudulent taxi drivers in order to curb the widespread practice of resetting taxi meters, the news website ihned.cz reported. The authorities believe that resetting taxi meters allows taxi drivers to only tax part of their earnings. The campaign by inspectors from the Czech Trade Inspection Authority, the Tax and Customs Administration, as well as from city and town halls planned for October should make sure taxi drivers are complying with new legislation that is to ban such taximeters as of January. Czech Minister of Agriculture Marian Jurečka is meeting with representatives of large supermarket chains on Thursday to discuss the issue of food waste as well as support of Czech producers. The ministry plans to launch a campaign to promote domestic foodstuff in mid-October, aimed at reducing the impact of a Russian embargo on EU food exports. The Czech movie Fair Play has been chosen as the Czech Republic's official entry for the 2015 Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. Written and directed by Andrea Sedláčková, Fair Play explores doping in sport in the 1980s communist Czechoslovakia. My name is Ruth Franková and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, as Scotland's independence referendum takes place, we get the views of a Scot in Prague and a Czech in Edinburgh. President Miloš Zeman welcomes World War II heroes to Prague Castle. And good news for stargazers, the Czech Republic is getting a new dark skies reserve. All that's coming up in today's programme. People in Scotland have been heading to the polls on Thursday to vote on independence from the UK. Only residents of Scotland are eligible to participate in the referendum, regardless of their nationality, meaning that thousands of Czechs can also cast their ballots. But being excluded from a crucial decision on their nation's future is frustrating for Scottish expats here in the Czech Republic, Jan Richter reports.
There are around 7,500 UK citizens living in the Czech Republic, according to figures from the British Embassy in Prague. It is unclear how many are Scottish, but some of those who are Scottish feel frustrated that they cannot take part in the crucial vote. Steve Gove comes from a small town on the east coast of Scotland, not far from Edinburgh. He moved to Prague 17 years ago and founded the Prague Fringe Festival, an annual event modelled after the much more renowned festival in his nation's capital. On Thursday, Steve flew back to Scotland to spend the seminal moment of his country's history with his family and friends. But he says he was puzzled when he realised he would not be able to vote.
I researched and tried to find out if there was any possible chance that I could vote, because I felt quite strongly, although at the time I didn't have any sense of feeling whether it was right or not for the country fully. And it's really frustrating. The reality is that I am a holder of a British passport, and at any given moment I could choose to go back and live at home, and I have no say in my country's future.
Steve Gove says he is very proud to be Scottish and that in his heart he would like an independent Scotland. But he's undecided on whether he would vote yes or no in the plebiscite due to concerns of how a Scottish secession might affect his life in Prague.
As a European citizen, I enjoy freely moving in and out of the Czech Republic with no need for a visa. And of course, this might all change, because what is likely to happen is that Scotland will have to leave the European Union, and whether we'll be fast-tracked to the front of the queue or whether we'll have to wait for a number of years until a process has gone through, it is a little bit unclear. So for the millions of Scottish people that live throughout the world, it must be very frustrating.
Unlike Scottish expats, thousands of EU nationals living in Scotland are entitled to take part in the vote. That includes an estimated 7,000 Czechs, some of whom are temporary labourers, while others are long-term residents. One of the latter is Dr. Anna Gregor, CBE. She left Czechoslovakia for Britain in 1969 and eventually settled in Edinburgh, becoming one of Scotland's leading oncologists. She opposes Scotland's independence and finds it strange that temporary residents also have a say.
You know, we had an invasion of Catalans who have an interest because of their separatist agenda to Scotland. We have had Poles until they realise that actually if they vote yes, and therefore we as a secession state, Scotland will cease to be in the EU until we somehow manage to get back, which is not yet been decided how it's going to work or any timetables, they will have to leave. You know, it is a mess.
Dr. Anna Gregor, ending that report by Jan Richter. And I'm sure many of you will be looking forward keenly to the results of that vote in Scotland. Here in the Czech Republic, President Miloš Zeman on Wednesday received a delegation of Czechoslovak World War II veterans at Prague Castle. They're members of a branch of the Czech Association of Freedom Fighters. The president had earlier promised to do so and will continue to meet with veterans on a regular basis. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Czechoslovaks who fought abroad on all fronts during World War II were honoured at Prague Castle on Wednesday by President Miloš Zeman. Ahead of the meeting, they gathered at a Prague venue to share greetings, prepare a gift of a pipe for the Czech head of state, and to remember days past. One who fought in World War II was Pavel Vranský, who saw action at Tobruk in northern Africa and later flew with the 311th Czechoslovak Bomber Squadron in the RAF. He briefly recalled the experience for Czech TV.
Tobruk was the toughest, and there was danger at every step. By comparison, being in the bomber wasn't nearly as bad. Inside the plane, one felt less at risk.
Fellow veteran Miloslav Masopust, also present on Wednesday, explained he had fought on the Eastern Front under General Ludvík Svoboda alongside the Red Army.
I was with the submachine gunners on a tank descent. The worst fighting was at the Dukla Pass, although it wasn't supposed to be originally.
At the Prague Castle, the group of veterans met with the president for an hour, with Mr. Zeman praising their contributions and sacrifice. It is the first time that solely members of the delegation of Czech foreign fighters were invited to meet with the head of state. And here's what Mr. Zeman had to say.
You lived dangerously and led your lives to the full. Let me thank you with all my heart.
Praise for veterans of World War II who fought for their country is obviously well deserved. Curiously, though, the president was unable to resist a dig at the broader population, suggesting Wednesday that many Czechs today lean towards cowardice, which raised a wave of negative comments among many readers online. In the comments sections of some dailies, some argued that Mr. Zeman was himself hardly an example of courage. Others suggested his words were not a fair criticism, arguing periods of great difficulty always brought out individuals who rose to the challenge. In the Second World War, incidentally, more than 50,000 men and women served in Czechoslovakia's foreign army, 1,100 of whom are still alive today.
That report was by Jan Wellinger. Now, in the final part of our program today, good news for those with a yen for observing the stars at night. The Czech Republic is getting a new dark skies reserve. Daniela Lazareva has more in this week's Panorama.
As of this week, the Czech Republic has a third dark skies reserve in the Maněkin region in western Bohemia. Its opening on Monday attracted amateur astronomers from around the country, as well as the mayors of the 10 villages that are located in the area. I spoke to one of the country's leading astrophysicists, Jiří Grigar, about why this particular reason was chosen and what has put the Czech Republic at the head of this trend on European and world scale.
Yeah, I think it was open because we already know from previous experience that relatively, although the situation in all Europe is not very good, so around Maněkin, the situation is a bit better because we had experiences with summer holiday observation seasons there, and we discovered that it's still relatively good. So I think it was a good requirement for making this formally, not only for the astronomical observations, also for the preserving the night. That is a very important nature commodity for many animals and also for some plants.
What are the benefits of such localities other than being suitable for night sky watching then?
I think the benefit is also the economic savings, because if you are directing all your light down, so there is no necessity to spend so much electricity because the amount of light is sufficient and you have no stray light that is just for nothing. This is one thing. And the other is that I think that because these dark sky areas in Europe and also in other continents are now becoming popular tourist attraction, so I think that this Maněkin area would be better attraction for tourists in the future. So I think it will bring some economic benefits indirectly.
There are 40 such parks in the world, 8 only in Europe. Of those, 3 in the Czech Republic. How come we're at the head of this trend? Are there many amateur astronomers in the country, or are we a nation of night sky watchers?
It seems that to me that really the Czech Astronomical Society that was established already in 1917, so is very active in supporting this trend. We do have a special commission within the Czech Astronomical Society. At the end of the last century, we even proclaimed a special law through the parliamentary procedures that is protecting this night darkness where it is necessary, not that we would like to have darkness all over the country. And therefore, I think that we had some step forward. And now I think that during these other activities in Moravian borders and northern Bohemian borders, we already have the experience that actually the mayors of small cities and of villages are really on our side. So that means that it's easier to put it through this process and to show the other regions that it is really suitable for such progress all over the country, I would say, because in all country, I think we can save a lot of light that is just wasting in night to the heavens.
We're talking about an area that's over 300 square kilometres. There are 10 villages in this region. What does this mean for them?
I think that they will benefit either from this tourist attraction or also from the less electricity bill for the public lightings.
Does it mean they have to make investments or are not allowed to open?
No, it's not necessary because the situation is not that bad at the moment. So only when there will be some replacements because of the, aging of some street lights. So then, of course, they already know that what kind of light they should order.
You said that this could attract more visitors to the locality within the so-called astro-tourism. What exactly is astro-tourism and why is it becoming more popular?
I think that in general, the people who are already bored from the old civilization products like television and internet and so on, so they wish to see the night sky with their own eyes. And it is really an experience that we do have, we professionals, because we are traveling to places where the night sky is really dark. So it is really an experience. At the beginning of the last century, it was still the experience of practically all earthly population, but now it's completely different. All Europe is practically over-illuminated at night. You can see it from the artificial satellite photographs. And there are only some small places like in central Spain when you can have still good dark nights. So I think the situation will improve because people are now aware of the problem.
You popularize this a lot. You're one of the astronomers who meets with the public, talks about it. How do you go about it? Do you take students there or children there, or do you organize events in these areas to bring their attention to this and what it offers?
It is mainly connected with our public observatories. We in Czech Republic probably have one of the highest density of these public observatories. These are equipped with very good and modern instruments. They have competent staff, so these people are taking their telescopes down to the country, and they make the night sky party. I think night sky parties are already quite popular, for instance, in the United States. So I think we will go in the same direction.
You've already said that the Czech Republic has a great number of amateur astronomers and that there are very many observatories in the country. How did this come about?
I think it's a long tradition because, in the medieval ages, we already have the university where astronomy was taught. Then in the beginning of 17th century, we had great astronomers in Prague, namely Johannes Kepler and Tycho de Brahe. So the people of this caliber were just the good example for future times. And I remember that, for instance, still at the end of the Austrian monarchy in 1917, this Czech Astronomical Society was established. I think it was a proof of this constant tradition. And then when the International Astronomical Union was created in 1919, so the former Czechoslovakia was the member from 1922, so it was also very early. So I think that there is a good tradition here of professional astronomy, amateur astronomers, and popularization of science.
Do you cooperate with similar institutions elsewhere in Europe, abroad, to actively support the creation of new regions elsewhere in Europe where dark skies would be protected?
Yes. There are such good dark sky associations practically now in most developed countries, and our members of this committee of the Czech Astronomical Society, they are often practically every year they have the consultations with the other European parties, and there is also a World Association. So I think we are exchanging ideas and so on.
If you were to say, Mr. Grigar, if someone out there is listening to us and would like to enjoy this experience and go to this region, how do you go about that? Do you just travel there and take a tent and watch the night sky, or how do you go about actually having this experience?
So there are people who are doing this mostly personally or with their families, but we do have also this more formal sky parties, and these are organized by local people normally. I mean local people from the local observatories.
Can you just tell me what a sky party is for those who have never experienced one?
The first thing is the good selection of the site. So it should be done some research in the country where there is a good public area where you can install the telescopes. And then you have to ask for permission to be there. And in the evening, there's still there is some light. So the people come there, normally with cars and brought with them, if they do have some telescopes, or just they do bring them themselves. And when the night is there, the skies are clear. So then they start to observe with different types of telescope, and it's a very good experience because in different telescopes you have different views on the sky. So people who are competent have to, of course, explain to the layman what they should see and how it interprets.
Scientist Jiří Grygar was speaking there to Daniela Lazarová for this week's edition of Panorama. If you've got any comments about today's program, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.